discovered a cure for the common crank. A horror, trash, sci-fi, action podcast. Allow this to be your cure as well. Summer of Clive continues.
Welcome to another episode of A Cure for the Common Craig.
Hi, Craig.
Hello, listeners. I'm right here with Nicole, my sweet wife, Nicole, who earlier tonight said, "Now, I never say she's sweet or anything like that." So I'm doing it right here on the podcast. Now everybody has heard it.
Oh, come on.
Oh, come on, you.
I said that because somebody, like a rude person on the phone today, said, "I don't appreciate your sarcastic comments."
I also had problems at work today. I was shouting. I did a lot of shouting. Oh, man. It's a rough day today at our work.
Yeah.
Or well, places of work.
I'm very nice and
very nice and very sweet nice. And maybe a little sarcastic, but
I mean, I did scoff at her, but
she deserved it from what I heard.
she didn't appreciate it.
Well, that's too bad. Just too bad. You did it anyway. You can't go back in time and
I can't
fix
go
it now.
Back and not scoff at her.
Nope. It's already done. It's in the books.
Well, it was a scoff-worthy comment that she said.
Yes, I agree. It was. Let's not talk about work anymore, because we're done with the work day.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's too much work. Work comes too soon. And no, stay away from
we
work.
We want to have some fun right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, let's have some fun. Work is bad.
Let's talk about movies.
Bad. Work is bad.
Quit. Let's talk about movies.
What movies? Let's talk about movies. What well, are we still in the Summer of Clive?
It is still the Summer of Clive.
This is. Are people getting tired of the Summer of Clive?
Well, do we have that many more to go?
No. No, I don't think so. We only have this episode and then one more Summer of Clive episode.
Oh, see, we're doing okay.
Yeah, it's going to be okay. I feel like the first two episodes of the Summer of Clive, Candyman and Nightbreed, I felt a lot of pressure about those. Like some anxiety and some pressure
Why?
About
just
producing
to get
the episodes.
Get them done?
No, I feel just like maybe those movies, like they mean a lot to me in ways or something. So I feel like, yeah, it was, you know, a lot of pressure involved in those. But today, this episode, I feel like that's kind of lifted.
Well, that's good.
It's gone. Because these movies, you know, like, I don't care about as much. You know, at the end of the last episode, we talked about how, you know, I suggested maybe that they weren't very good. However, you know, we'll talk about them and we'll see what we think. We'll see what we think about that.
So,
here in the Summer of Clive.
Yeah, Summer of Clive.
So, we have two movies this week, a double feature. You had to watch two movies, Nicole.
Two, written by Clive Barker, or based on stories by Clive Barker.
And let me tell you, Nicole, you know, like, having to watch multiple movies, that's rough. She doesn't like to watch movies
because... Well, it takes away from my shows.
Yeah, she likes to watch TV shows. And you've really been hooked on listening to an audiobook, like, every night before you go to bed, like... And you've been doing this for, like, 6 months, though, or so, it seems like.
Well, because...
You gotta go to bed listening to an audiobook.
Well, because I'm trying to not, you know, plug in and get the blue light.
The blue light,
before sleep.
The dreaded blue light.
Because that's not good.
That's
not
right here.
You're not supposed to have, like, screen time. At least, like, I've heard different theories. I've heard 30 minutes. I've heard 2 hours.
I've heard, like, a half a day.
No,
I'm exaggerating, Nicole.
So I want to lay in bed and not have to get up and turn the light off. So I haven't been reading a real book.
And you don't want to read a book on your tablet screen because that is
still
the dreaded blue light.
Blue light. So I thought, okay, I'll just listen to an audiobook and fall asleep.
Now, what if your device has one of the, like, the filter? Does that not work? That doesn't count?
I don't know if that still works or not.
Oh.
I mean, I've talked to some sleep doctors.
And they know best.
And they know best.
I see. So what about your husband, who's not very sweet, who falls asleep almost every night while watching a movie or something?
Well,
what about that?
I think that that's just your way.
That's my way. Yes. I'm going to stick with my way of relaxing.
Craig's way of relaxing.
Because if I don't do that, sometimes, yeah, I just can't fall asleep.
You can't. You're not. You've never been the type to just get in bed and fall asleep.
No, very rarely.
That.
I have to be completely wiped out and exhausted.
Yeah.
Or sick or something.
You have to, like fight to go to sleep. Always have.
It's a struggle.
It is. Me, I can just fall asleep.
Oh, you just fall asleep, especially in the car, out like that. Like what? Like that. Okay. Okay, that's enough. So,
okay,
we have the double feature of Clive Barker movies here.
Yeah.
And both of these stories are based on, both of these movies are based on short stories that are in different volumes of The Books of Blood, which we've already talked about. And The Books of Blood, there was a famous quote that came out back in the day, Nicole, probably like, what, 30 plus, more than 30 years ago now, this quote came out. And the quote was something to the effect of, "I have seen the future of horror, and its name, his name, is Clive Barker."
Okay.
Do you know who said that?
I have no idea.
The person who said that is Stephen King. And this was, yeah, in like the mid-80s or something, after the Books of Blood were released. And before that, you know, before that quote, before that, like, Clive Barker, you know, like, you know, he's a relative unknown. You know, people haven't really heard of him, you know. But then, when you get, like, Stephen King, you know, quoting about you,
saying you have some good horror,
then that quote popped up on everything, like every single Clive Barker thing, like that was popping up like everywhere you saw it. It was just everywhere. After that, yeah, like started to kind of catch on a little bit. And Clive Barker started to get some, you know, opportunities to do some, you know, screenplays for film. And he did two early on. And one of those movies we're going to talk about a little bit later in the podcast, but he wasn't particularly thrilled with the results.
It seems like he's never particularly thrilled with how the outcome
it does
are.
It does seem to happen often. So the one that we're going to talk about first is a story. Well, let's take a step back here for a second. So yes, after he had done these screenplays for these other people to make movies of his work, he wasn't satisfied, didn't like them. So then he was given the opportunity to direct one of his own stories, The Hellbound Heart, which was not in the Books of Blood. That's a separate little novella, Nicole. The Hellbound Heart, which became a movie in 1987 called what, Nicole? It was called Hellraiser. But no, we're not talking about Hellraiser here on the show today. However, we're just saying that was kind of his directorial debut. He got the reins to make his own movie based on his own work.
Right.
So, then years later, many years later, down the road, in the year 2008, a movie was released. Now, this movie, Clive Barker was relatively uninvolved. He wrote the original story, which is featured in The Books of Blood, Volume 1. And that story, Nicole, and the movie share the same title. And what is the title of this movie, Nicole?
The Midnight Meat Train.
And what do you think of that title, Nicole?
Well, it's kind of, like, weird. You're like, what?
Yeah, it's a little
Midnight
weird.
Midnight Meat Train.
Do you think maybe some people would think that it's a little off-putting?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Because meat, like, I don't know, like, raw meat.
It just
doesn't sound.
It doesn't sound great.
People don't like to be faced with the fact that they eat animals.
Okay.
You know, like I eat meat, And yes. I don't like, I love animals.
Yes.
But
I also eat meat, but I also love animals.
I can't make the step to become, you know, a non-meat eater.
Yes, a vegetarian or a vegan, something like that.
Yeah, right. And, but people like me don't like to be reminded that they were once alive.
Yes. So that's what you think. In your mind, the Midnight Meat Train does that for you. It makes you think of live animals that you're then going to consume after they're dead.
Right, and I don't want to think of that because I'm, you know, I'm soft-hearted and I'm still a meat eater.
Yes. So, you think of any, like, vegetarians or vegans, like, saw, like, advertising for this movie, you think they were just like, well, I'm not watching that, the Midnight Meat Train, that is gross!
It might not appeal to them at all.
That's very, very possible, I suppose. The Midnight Meat Train, yeah, it's an odd title. I think that, you know, like, when I originally read the story, the short story, I thought, you know, that's an odd title. Uh-huh. And yeah, it's just, I don't know, one of those Clive Barker things, maybe? I don't know, just kind of a weird title.
I think I was impressed with this movie on the first viewing in 2008 because didn't we see it at a horror movie marathon?
Yes, like we did.
Like a 24-hour horror movie theater?
Yes, we did, Nicole.
And Clive Barker was there.
Clive Barker was there. I think we mentioned this, that yes, it was at the time, I believe it was called the Music Box of Horrors? Is that what it, no. At the time, that's what it's called now. If they ever have it again after all of this pandemic stuff. It was originally called the Music Box Massacre. And then there was some dispute between, like, groups or something. The Music Box started doing their own 24-hour marathon, which they then changed to the Music Box of Horrors. And the people who were in charge of doing the original, yes, Music Box Massacre, went on to do their own thing just called The Massacre, which was a separate 24-hour horror marathon. In 1 year when they split, I did go to both. I think only one I stayed like the whole time, which because I was crazy. But the other
I've been to several that we've had to stay the whole time.
We've been to a number of them. We haven't done it for a number of years because
I'm
now we're much
old.
Older.
And, I'm too old now.
And also they changed it because in the past, as we're getting off on a tangent here, you could bring in your own food and like stuff like that, and
snacks
like it was much
drinks,
more lax.
Yeah.
But then they changed it to where it's like, no, you can't bring anything in. You have to buy what we have, and they have like food trucks and things like that sometimes. But still, you know, it's different.
I mean, you just want your own Teddy Grahams.
Yeah, your Teddy Grahams. You got to have those Teddy Grahams. Which flavor? Honey.
Well, honey.
It's got to be honey.
Yeah. Honey.
The Midnight Meat Train, yes, was released. Okay, now it has kind of an odd history as far as its release goes. So like we said, The Midnight Meat Train, the short story, originally in Clive Barker's Books of Blood, Volume 1. I believe it is the second story in Volume 1. And that was published, like we said, in the first Summer of Clive episode. The Books of Blood originally came out like 1984, 1985, something like that. The Midnight Meat Train, the movie, has a bizarre history where originally it was released in limited release August 1st of 2008. I'm not sure what studio released this, but apparently there's some kind of problem here. Some sort of problem where when it was released in limited release, it was only released on like 104, 108 screens, something like that. And they were all like discount theaters, like dollar theaters, as they're sometimes called. So the studio, maybe they just didn't.
Did we see it in 2008?
We did, yes, but we didn't see it in this weird limited theatrical run.
Okay.
Because, yes, like you said, we saw it at the marathon that we went to. So, apparently there was a dispute. Clive Barker was upset about how the movie was being handled. Even though, like, he may have been a producer on it. I can't remember. I didn't write that down. But he was certainly responsible for the story. And, you know, it was, you know, kind of his property, at least originally. So he was upset about how the studio handled it. He said, you know, like, the studio's only interested in pushing, you know, these other movies like The Strangers, I think, which came out earlier that summer and had a bigger release. And then when it came to The Midnight Meat Train, they just kind of, you know, pushed it off to the side. And he blamed studio politics. He said it was a political issue within the studio where The Midnight Meat Train just kind of got pushed aside and ignored. Mm-hmm. So it ends up getting, like, put on these discount theaters and doesn't do very well, of course. Its budget originally for The Midnight Meat Train was $15 million. And then, at these discount theaters, in the U.S. domestically, it only made, like, $83,000. That's it.
That's it.
Not even $100,000. So, worldwide, it ended up making like $3.5 million theatrically, but still far, far short of the original budget, certainly. So, yes, at this Music Box Massacre that we went to, which, yes, was in 2008, Clive Barker was there, and apparently this was kind of his way of, like, you know, getting back at the studio, doing kind of these, you know, like, personal appearances with the movie and things like that, and talking about it at these shows. So, yeah, there was this whole dispute, and hopefully, you know, it's found a little bit more life on home video now, Nicole. Maybe streaming, rental services, home video, Blu-ray releases, things of that nature. So, The Midnight Meat Train, it is rated R, Nicole. And it runs 1 hour and 38 minutes. It is a horror mystery, according to IMDb, Nicole. A horror mystery. How does that sound?
Okay. I can accept that.
You're okay with that?
I can accept it.
Okay. I guess there's a mysterious element to it, I suppose.
And I guess it's resolved.
Yeah, it is. It is. Kind of. Well, kind of.
Some of it.
You know, yeah.
There's a lot of open ends for me.
Yeah, and we'll get to that, clearly, because that seems to be disturbing you. So we'll have to talk about that. But yeah, it also does differ a little bit from the original short story, but not too much. It follows it pretty closely. This is one of those movies where it, like Candyman, there's like the original story and then it expands on the idea and it's given a little bit more depth. The story, the short story, there's not a whole lot to it. It too, I think, is only like 35 pages or something like that. It's pretty brief. So let's read the IMDb synopsis, plot summary, description, Nicole. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
A photographer's obsessive pursuit of dark subject matter leads him into the path of a serial killer who stalks late-night commuters, ultimately butchering them in the most gruesome ways. I got goosebumps reading that. That was exciting.
You know, that's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
Whoever wrote that did a good job.
You know who did this one?
Who?
Movie guy. That's what it says. Ooh. Movie guy.
Well, whoever wrote that.
Good job, movie guy. You did all right.
Movie guy, you did a good job.
You did okay. All right. So we've got the Midnight Meat Train. What is this? What's this one about here, Nicole?
So you have Bradley Cooper.
What did you say in the last episode? Brad Bradley playing the character Leon.
So Leon is a photographer. He's an artist.
Let's pause for just a second so I can get on another tangent. So Bradley Cooper, I said, you know, I teased before that he's one of the sexiest men alive. And I was evaluating that as we were watching the movie. And, you know, I don't really see it. I don't see it.
He just...
You know, like, he's okay. And maybe this was, like, he was younger in 2008. Maybe as he's aged, he's gotten more weathered or something, and it's made him more attractive.
When was he the sexiest man alive?
I don't know. I just said that. I'm not sure if he ever really was. I'm just...
No, I think he was.
He was one of people's sexiest men alive.
Yeah, I don't know what it was.
I have no idea. But anyway, so yeah, you know, I was like, you know, he's okay, I guess. I mean, he's a fine-looking fella.
He's
a little goofy-looking.
I mean, whatever. I don't think he's a baghead.
No, I didn't say that! Nicole, that's horrible, a baghead.
Well, then you gotta put a bag over there.
No, I understand what you're saying, but that just sounds like that's wrong, Nicole. So what were you saying about Leon, Brad Bradley being a photographer?
So Bradley Cooper plays Leon, and he's a photographer, and he'd like...
Of dark subject matter.
Well, I think he takes pictures, you know, to pay the bills.
To pay the bills.
But he'd like to, you know, branch out and be more artistic with his work.
Yes.
Because that's what his real passion
is. That's what it's all about.
Exactly.
The art of the photograph.
I don't know if she was a gallery owner or she's just an artistic guide, but she told him that he needed to go a step further in his artwork.
Seems like, yeah, maybe a gallery owner or some sort of, like, I don't know. artistic influencer or something. Like,
yeah.
She's, like, pushing art on people and trying to get them to buy it. So,
right,
yeah.
Right, right.
So it must be her gallery, at one point. Or she's in charge of it.
The actress, Brooke Shields.
Brooke Shields! And I thought, I said to you, I said, is it kind of weird that Brooke Shields is in this movie? It just seems weird to me.
Brooke Shields, she's the gallery owner, and she even says at one point, they'll buy anything I tell them to.
Yeah. Yeah, she plays the character Susan Hoff. Brooke Shields, one of those people that's been around forever.
I think they
she's been around forever.
I
and
think
like
they
she's,
just needed
she's
a good-looking old older woman.
Do you think she would appreciate
no,
you saying...
No, I didn't say
Brooke
old.
Shields, she knows that you said that now. You called her an old woman.
I didn't mean to. I meant older woman.
She probably won't like that either. I hope she doesn't listen to this show,
mature
Nicole.
Lady. Is that...
Even, a mature
that's
lady.
Even worse.
Okay, well,
we're probably the same age.
Let's just no. She's older than you. Now okay. We'll stop with the Brooke Shields age thing.
Yeah,
we'll just keep going.
You could cut all that Brooke Shields.
Well, stop it. Stop saying cut it out. You know what? Now we're leaving it all in. We're not going to cut anything out anymore because Nicole keeps saying cut that out. You can cut that part out. I'm not going to edit the whole thing here. Let's go. Get to talking, woman. So, Leon, and in this art gallery, did you know, Nicole, that within this art gallery, visually, on the movie, the actual movie, some of the paintings that are there in the gallery shown are by Clive Barker?
Really? I did not
you didn't,
know that.
I should have pointed that out
you
when we were watching it.
You should have pointed that out, yeah. Yeah, because I did not know that.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I'll have to go back and watch them.
Go watch it.
Watch it.
Let's stop and watch it right now.
Okay.
On the podcast. No. Go ahead. Keep going with the story. Now you don't even know where you were.
So he takes her advice and he goes out late at night.
And she's a little harsh.
Yeah.
You know, she's a little rough with him. You know, like, you know, it's got to be better than this. You know, like, these photos, this is not impressive.
She's like, take it a step further. So he wants to show, like, the city, the darker side of the city.
Yes.
Or what the city is about.
And this is set in New York City, so, yeah.
So he is drawn to, like, the night of the city at night. So he goes
possible
to
the ruffians. He's on the lookout for ruffians, maybe some crime, you know, accidents, you know, things like that. You know, the darker, seedier side of New York City.
But it's almost confrontational.
But not rats.
Yeah, not rats. Like Willard.
Yes, just like Willard. It's almost confrontational. What do you mean by that?
Like, you know, he gets confronted because he's taking photographs and he tells these guys to stop, like, I don't know, like they're harassing a girl.
Yeah, yeah. They're definitely, you know, like taking things too far with a girl, a woman, a lady that they don't know. So, yeah, they're definitely, you know, like nearing the point of sexual assault.
Right, right. And he steps in. As any, you know.
But he's also, like, observing and photographing as it's happening,
right,
too.
Right, right. And he only feels confident enough to do this because he points out the video camera.
There's a security camera on this staircase where they're standing and he's taking the photographs. Yeah, he sees that. And then he's like, okay, now I can, you know, like, call him out. You know, this has gone a little bit too far. I've gotten enough material here for my photographs, now I'll call him out and point out the security camera.
Right, right. Yeah. So,
but there's a little bit of like a standoff. It is kind of uncomfortable.
It is kind of uncomfortable.
Brad Bradley almost gets messed up.
But I think this is his first visual shot of the train.
Yes, the subway.
So as this, the female that he basically saved.
Yes, she's very thankful, grateful. And kisses him.
Right. And rushes to the train.
Yes.
And you see a hand.
Catch
the door. And you see a ring on this man's hand. And so that's kind of like, it's very creepy to me that you see the hand there.
And you see that later then in one of his photographs.
Right.
Yeah. It's pointed out.
Because the ring is so unique.
Yes.
It's almost like a... you know, you can tell it's like a special you know, it means something.
It's symbolic, yes.
It's a sigil or some sort.
Yes.
So don't you think you should talk about the guy on the train?
Well, who is the guy on the train, Nicole?
Well, Vinnie Jones.
Vinnie Jones? Yeah. Nicole, let's talk about Vinnie Jones here for a second.
Okay.
You said that he was one of the sexiest men alive or something.
I did. I think he's handsome.
You think he's kind of handsome,
well,
huh?
Well, and like, I think he's... Yeah, I think he's striking.
Well, you know what he is? And it's going to all make sense. Because Nicole loves those British guys and their British accents. Well, he's from England, and he's a footballer, Nicole.
Well, I just think that he's very, like, he's just very, he's very stern-looking.
So you like a real stern-looking man, is what you're saying. That's your favorite man. The Common Craig's goofy face isn't stern enough. I'm going to work on it. I'm going to practice right now.
Yes, that's very stern of you.
Okay.
So I don't know. I think he's very distinguished looking.
Yeah, Vinnie Jones, like I said, is from England, and he was a footballer. He played soccer here in the U.S., folks. Soccer. And yes, apparently there was a photograph of him at one point grabbing the testicles of another player. You know, like during
a match.
A match, yes. And apparently, you know, that's frowned upon, you know, like,
oh, probably,
to try to like
so
grab somebody else's nuts and like, you know,
hurt
their
them.
Genitals would hurt them. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yes, Vinnie Jones, kind of he's like a tough guy, you know, he's a tough guy. And earlier on, like he was cast as a tough guy in movies. Like he was in the movie Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels. And he was actually the Juggernaut in the third X-Men movie, which is a terrible movie. But he was the Juggernaut in that, which is also like a tough guy character, mm-hmm. of course. But yeah, so Vinnie Jones, stern-looking British man that grabs testicles.
Well, anyway, he plays the character on the train that the character's very grim.
What's the character's name?
I don't think he has one, does he?
Well, they call him something, though, later. You know, like, he's got it on his bag. And in the short story, they call him this as well.
His name on the bag is called Mahogany.
Yes, Mahogany. And they do call him Mahogany in the short story, too. Yes. So it all ties together.
So
yes, that character is Mahogany.
So he's a very grim, fastidious...
He shows no emotion.
He shows no emotion. He wears suits.
Yes, he does wear
at
suits.
At nighttime.
Tie, suit, tie.
But in the daytime, his day job, he's a butcher.
A butcher?
A butcher at a, like, a meat packaging plant.
Mm-hmm. And we find that out because Brad Bradley keeps stalking him.
Right.
Because he's struck by his appearance. When he sees him coming up, like, the stairs or the escalator out of the subway, yeah, he's struck by him.
Well, I don't know that I would stalk Vinnie Jones from that.
Well, Brad Bradley certainly did.
Quit calling him Brad Bradley.
Why? So Vinnie Jones and Brad Bradley, yes, he finds out that he was a butcher. But, like, not just, like, a butcher in, like, a storefront, you know, butcher. Like,
yeah,
he works at some sort of meat processing plant
right,
or something.
So, you get the, you know, there's like, sides of beef.
Sides of beef hanging up.
Hanging up. And
he knows how to work with meat, is what we're establishing.
Right. And so...
And testicles. Craig! Keep
That's
going.
On a personal level, Craig.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Getting around to what happens on the train, I guess you could probably guess.
Yeah, you can probably guess. Well, the first person was a model, this lady that he, you know, Bradley Cooper, not Brad Bradley, rescued essentially from these hoodlums. And then she gets on the train and then she disappears. She's
right.
gone and no one knows what happened to her.
Right. So...
But then there's another sequence, I assume the following night, where there's some other people on the subway late at night. And Nicole, one of the people on the subway late at night was actually
Ted Raimi.
Well, yes, that's what I was going to say. He was in Candyman as well. So this is two Clive Barker movie appearances for, what was his name again?
Ted Raimi.
That's right. Yes, he had the cameo at the beginning of Candyman. Now he's got a cameo here on the Midnight Meat Train.
And like I've said before, he's on
Xena Warrior Princess, the brother of director Sam Raimi of Evil Dead fame.
And a Nicole crush.
Ted Raimi. That's right. Yes. So Ted Raimi is with two other people, I believe like his girlfriend or wife or something, and then someone else, I don't know who that other guy is. They're like this trio that's together. Well, Mahogany, and here come the spoilers, everybody, here are more spoilers.
Mahogany pulls out this stainless steel hammer and a meat hook.
Which appears to be some sort of a tenderizing hammer.
Like, a mallet.
Yeah, a meat tenderizing mallet.
And, man, he can swing that mallet.
Well, okay, and here's where I've got my first real problem with the movie. So he swings the mallet, and this is kind of like a cute little scene, because Ted Raimi's eyeball pops out from the blow. So he's hit in the back of the head, his eyeball comes popping out. Now, the problem with this, Nicole, is that it's CGI. And this is what I remember from the original viewing when we saw it at the 24-hour marathon, is some of the, CGI gore. I'm against that overall. I like to see the real practical effects that are actually created, not by a computer, by human hands. But, you know, the eyeball popping out, that's kind of a tough scene maybe to replicate, but I bet somebody could have done it. A special effects artist could have done that.
Tom Savini could have done it.
Yes, certainly. So, yeah, but yes, Ted Raimi then, well, he's finished.
He's finished, and the other guy and Ted Raimi's wife, they're finished.
Yeah, they're finished, and I made note specifically of the fact that Ted Raimi's wife in the movie, steps on and slips on his eyeball on the floor and the train, which is kind of amusing. And there's a little bit, there's several scenes of eyeball gruesomeness, in the Midnight Meat Train, and eyeball gruesomeness, it always kind of bothers me a little bit.
Well, you have an eyeball, phobia anyway.
Yes. It bothers me a little bit when I see eye violence, I guess.
So, it's just a lot of killing on the train.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, killing on the train.
And then at one point, you do see the conductor. The conductor is completely aware of Mahogany shenanigans on the train, I think the conductor actually had to shoot somebody because they got away from Mahogany.
That could be. I don't remember that particular scene, but it was, you might be right.
It was the urban patrol guy.
Oh, yeah. The, what was he? What did it say? Urban defenders is what it said on his jacket.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is kind of I don't know if they're called that, but it's in New York, they have this group of people called the Guardian Angels that are not police officers, but they do try to watch and prevent crime. And that's essentially
he
was portraying.
They're trying to protect people.
But it was weird because when this guy, who's played by Quentin Rampage Jackson, by the way, who's a UFC fighter.
Okay.
So, yes.
I bet he could have taken Vinny Jones.
They probably would have had a pretty good fight, I bet. But anyway, so yes, he kind of Vinny Jones is just sitting on one of the seats on one of the benches.
Oh, and he calls him Forrest Gump, basically.
Yeah, he kind of lunges at him and tries to taunt him.
Yeah.
And then he calls him Forrest Gump because he's just sitting there with this bag with this suit on. And,
it is reminiscent of Forrest Gump sitting on the bench.
But I feel like this urban defender guardian angel, why is he trying to instigate something with Vinny Jones? Mahogany. Yes. So they end up having this fight, a brawl, and so the conductor ends up shooting him.
Yeah.
I don't remember that part, I guess. I was too involved in the brawling or something. Yes, the killings keep happening, and Bradley Cooper is still stalking Mahogany. Bradley Cooper, he does have a love interest, played by Leslie Bibb, playing the character Maya. And at some point, Maya and their mutual friend Roger Bart, who's playing the character Jurgis, they get concerned. They're concerned about Bradley Cooper, Leon, having this kind of obsession with, you know, just trying to get, like, these dark photographs, I guess. Going out at night trying to get these dark photographs.
They know he's obsessed with this butcher.
Yes, this butcher in particular, yeah. Because he's brought it up. He finds, you know, he keeps stalking him and getting information on him. He ends up getting into some microfiche at a local library or something and finding old articles from, like, 1896 or something like that, yeah. Right? 1895, 96, about, like, a butcher then, way back when, that was also involved in some sort of, like, killings or, you know, something like that, a suspect in some killings. And in our minds watching the movie, we're like, oh, my God, you know, like, this mahogany guy has been around that long?
Yeah.
But we'll get more detail into that later when we spoil the ending of the movie. So they're concerned because clearly he's kind of, like, deteriorating, Leon. He's, like, going down this dark path and, like, he's a vegetarian, and then, yes, he's, like, suddenly, you know, after seeing Mahogany at this meat processing place, he's, like, suddenly, like, he's, like, maybe I'll have some, like, meat, and he orders a steak at the local diner in front of Jurgis, and he's, like, what, you know, like, this is weird, and, you know, like, they're a little concerned about him. So Mahogany, though, he's got an apartment, and a couple times when we see him in this apartment, in one particular scene that is
disturbing to Nicole.
Yes. And you remembered this from the initial viewing. In 2008. I really didn't. I didn't really remember this situation.
So,
but yeah,
obviously this stuck out in my mind.
Yes, it definitely did. What goes on
so,
here in this,
like,
scene?
So, like, he's in the bathroom and he takes a razor blade and he's slicing, like, tumor-looking things off
his chest.
Yes,
he unbuttons his shirt. Yeah, yeah. So he's got weird, like, yes, growths that, yes, like
and
you
he's,
said,
and he's
maybe some sort of tumors.
Slicing them off, and he's keeping them in jars
little
in his
jars.
Medicine cabinet.
Yeah, jars
and that was
full of these little
very
growths.
Disturbing to me.
Uh-huh, yeah. And it is, it's kind of gross.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of grosses me out when I think about it now. I'm getting a little sick. But yeah, and it doesn't seem like it really bothers him anymore. Like, you know, he's done this so often, all these jars of these things, that, like, he doesn't even really seem to hurt him or anything. Is that the impression you got? He's just kind of used to it. This is just what he does. Yeah, I don't know. It's
pretty
weird.
Disturbing to me.
Yes. There's the one scene that I really like where Bradley Cooper is, you know, kind of after, you know, Mahogany, trying to spy on him at the meat plant. And he's, like, photographing him from the distance. And you see Mahogany raise, like, a knife, like he's going to, like, you know, attack the meat that he's working on, that he's cutting and processing. And he turns. Mahogany turns and, like, looks directly into the camera. And I love that scene because you're like, oh, God. And, like,
oh God.
You know, Bradley Cooper hides behind, like, a wall.
But then he peeks out again.
Yes, he peeks out again. And who's right there?
He's right there in front of him.
But who?
Mahogany!
Yes, he's right there staring at him. And I had forgotten that's what happened. So when we were watching it this time, I expected, you know, him to not be there. I expected him to go back to the meat, back to working on the meat. But no, he's right there waiting for Bradley Cooper to peek back around the corner. And then there's a pursuit. He chases him for a little bit. You know, they end up, you know, he ends up getting away and they break off. But yeah. So you got this situation with Jurgis and Leslie Bibb, Maya, they go search the butcher, Mahogany's apartment.
Right, which I feel like that, you know, that's a no-no.
They
were definitely in the wrong.
You know what that is? That's breaking and entering.
But they found a bunch of, like, surgical tools and, you know, just creepy stuff.
Yeah, they found some, what might be considered evidence.
Yeah, just Or some macabre collection.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's no proof that just owning that stuff is an issue.
Nicole loves a good macabre collection. But yeah, the police, they don't seem particularly interested.
Right, right.
So Jurgis disappears. He's gone. Bradley Cooper continues to pursue Mahogany, stalks him again onto this midnight train, which is actually more like 2 a.m. or something.
Yeah, 2 a.m.
Which is a little strange. But, yes, He ends up pursuing him onto the train again, and he finds Jurgis there with other victims, and they're hanging by their feet from, like,
meat hooks.
Yes.
So it's very reminiscent of the cattle, the half cows hanging up and
hanging. Yes.
At the butcher packaging plant.
Yes, exactly. So yes, the visual is the same. You're supposed to identify that with the other, of course.
Absolutely.
So yes, they're hanging from handles on the subway car. But really, yes, it looks exactly like you said, like this kind of like hallway of. Mm-hmm. You know, meat slabs.
So essentially, the butcher,
human meat,
is a butcher in the daytime and a butcher at night.
He butchers all day long.
Does
he ever sleep, Mahogany?
I'm worried.
You know what? Maybe he's seeing too much of the blue light. Reflected in his like stainless steel utilities? Maybe that's what it is. Too much blue light. He can't sleep. Oh my goodness, Nicole. So yes, Mahogany. Bradley Cooper, whose character's name is Leon, they end up, you know, kind of like...
Having a struggle,
and, well...
I mean, I think there's a lot of, like, you know, there might be some mystical stuff going on with Leon, too.
Yeah.
Because I feel like he's seen...
Yeah.
Seen things.
Yeah, they do show that.
He's transitioning.
Yeah, it seems like... He's gotten caught in this web or something.
Right.
And yeah, like now he's like, you know, it's just like he can't avoid it. Like he's just drawn in now, unfortunately.
Right.
Well, fortunately, unfortunately. I guess it depends on what he wants to do with his life. So, if we're going to spoil it here, the final battle ends up being, well, Vinnie Jones, Mahogany, ends up getting knocked off by...
By Leon.
So, the butcher is gone. So what happens is, there needs to be a new butcher.
There needs to be a new Mahogany.
Yeah, so you have the conductor, like you said, played by Tony Curran, who you identified as someone in the 13th Warrior. And I was like...
I'm like, he's in the 13th Warrior, and you totally did not believe
me. I was like, really? So I looked it up, and you were right, he is in the 13th Warrior.
I know the actors in the 13th Warrior.
You sure do, because it's one of your favorite movies of all time. Only succeeded by Club Dread. No, I'm kidding. So, yes. But in the story, in the short story, and here in the movie, kind of, like, you see these things, creatures, at the end of the movie... And this is what they're doing. They're supplying meat, human meat, for these creatures that are in this, like...
Subway tunnel,
yes.
Right, because you have to keep the balance.
Yeah.
Basically, you're supplying them meat so they don't go out and find their own meat.
They don't go out and kill everybody in the city, I guess.
I don't know. And it's been around forever and ever
Yes, the movie does nothing... To explain the situation,
yeah,
does nothing at all.
So I would really like closure on that.
Yeah.
I really want to know what those tumors are.
What's the tumor really... thing all about? These things he's cutting off. But yeah, so in the book...
Is Vinnie Jones really the butcher back? I mean, is it Mahogany the same Mahogany?
And yeah, see,
in the 1800s?
No, I think not. I think what the movie does here at the end by... Establishing Bradley Cooper, Leon, as the new butcher is where you see, you know, like, okay.
He's becoming.
It's like a rotating butcher
it's
role.
It's kind of like in The Princess Bride, the Dread Pirate Roberts role just keeps getting to the next person.
Yes, exactly. Somebody else always just assumes that role then at some point when the other has retired.
I don't know. You could see it like that, or you could see that the creatures extend the human life.
It's possible. Yeah,
so
that is possible.
You could derive either way.
That is true. That's true, Nicole. So in the short story, if we're going to compare those just briefly here, like I said, the movie does a lot more. There's a lot more to the characters in the movie than in the short story. Basically, in the short story, what happens is you have two separate stories, two characters that intersect. You have the Leon character, Leon Kaufman, who is the one character. He's not a photographer in the short story. He's just some sort of office worker or something like that. Happens to be working late. You have, though, the butcher character, who is Mahogany. These two characters end up intersecting on the midnight meat train. That's basically all it is. It's like these two characters, you know, like quickly are established, and then here they go, let's put them together. They have this fight, a battle, and it's talked about, it's hinted that Mahogany is getting old. He's just getting kind of old, getting kind of worn down, and, you know, like, maybe something's going to have to be done about this. Like,
the conductor in the movie says that his heart's not in it anymore.
Yes, they do say that in the movie as well. So, yes, in the story, yes, there is a conductor as well who's in cahoots with Mahogany. That's a fact in the short story. And then what happens is, yes, they're on this midnight meat train. They, you know, go beyond everything else. You know, like, they go beyond the stops. Like, this is the last stop. If you miss that stop, then you're on the midnight meat train. So, of course, Leon falls asleep on the train and then wakes up and he's like, you know, did I miss the stop? Where am I? And it's like, you know, it's like pretty much too late. Mahogany then sees him. Leon's already seen by peeking through a hole that, you know, he's up to no good. He's doing some killings. And then, you know, Mahogany catches Leon, sees him, and he's like, you know, were you supposed to be hiding from me? You know, like, and yeah, they end up then having a similar situation where, and it doesn't last very long. Again, because I think, you know, Leon is kind of the more youthful character. You know, Mahogany is just kind of old and worn down. So Leon pretty quickly ends up offing Mahogany. And then, yes, just kind of ends up having to assume the role of this butcher because these beings who are different in the story than they are in the movie. In the movie, they're very much like creatures.
They're like almost like animalistic, or on first viewing, I guess I remembered them as alien-like.
Yeah, yeah.
But on second viewing, they're very animalistic.
Yeah. And in the story, they're more like just kind of like withered, kind of like old people almost. And it's kind of established in the short story that these are kind of like the sort of elders that were like in charge of like creating New York City. And like these are kind of like the people that are left, and like they're very aged, but like they still want to like have some sort of control, I guess, over what's happening. So as a result, they need to be like fed human meat, cannibals or something. I don't know. It's a little left to the imagination. And I remember reading the story originally back in the day and thinking like it was kind of like a train ride to hell. And then rereading the story before we saw the movie, I think, and being a little disappointed that the ending is, you know, slightly different in that way. But yes, Leon, regardless, story, movie, ends up becoming this butcher character.
Yeah.
At the end of the movie...
So, but I feel like there is something mystical, because how did the photographer... He's like, okay, I'll become Mahogany.
Yeah.
So there has to be some sort of, like, mind trick.
Yeah, something.
That's going on.
Something
to
happened.
Turn him into the Mahogany character.
Exactly, yeah. And I didn't notice this in the movie. Maybe you did. I'm going to mention this, and I get the feeling that you must have not have seen it either, because I didn't see it. And then I read this, and I was like, huh, now I feel like I need to go back and check what that was. So there's a character, Detective Lynn Hadley, played by Barbara Eve Harris, that we mentioned earlier, like the police. They don't really seem that interested in what's going on here. They just seem to be kind of like, okay, you know, like, yeah, whatever's going on, you know. Maya, Leslie Bibb, we don't really care. And Leon, too, when Leon goes to the police, kind of like, you know, like, she's always
we'll
kind of like...
take a look into this.
Yeah, and she's always kind of like making those people out, and certainly breaking and entering, which Maya and Jurgis do, is not a great thing to do. But then you have Leon, too, who's, you know, like taking these photographs, and, you know, the detective is also kind of saying, you know, like, oh, well, you know, like, yeah, and when in your, you know, photography session of this, you know, potential sexual assault, you know, when did you decide to stop photographing and, you know, actually, you know, like, do something about this? So it's kind of like, you know, like,
She's accusing, like, trying to make them the bad guys.
Yeah, switching up the moral balance or something. And apparently, she's in cahoots. She's in on it.
Right.
Like, the police are in on it, again, because maybe these are some sort of, like, New York City elders. I don't know. But yes, because apparently at the end of the movie, or at some point in the movie, maybe you see it earlier, too, she's wearing a necklace that apparently has the same symbol
as
Mahogany's ring.
Oh.
Which, did you see that?
I did not see it.
I didn't see it either. So we're going to have to, like, check that out.
So did the conductor, was he wearing a emblem?
I don't know. I don't know if he was wearing something also. Yeah,
well, because,
that'd be curious,
like,
to see.
You know, you have to think that
all the members of this cult are wearing this.
You have to have a support team for these kind of actions.
That's right. You got to have a way to cover up some of these actions.
That's
all this
right.
butchering of humans on a subway train.
Well, how about a mass or murder, Craig?
If we're going to a mass or murder, the Midnight Meat Train. Now, originally, I may have just assumed that I was going to murder it. But on this, I guess this is probably the third time I've seen it, this third viewing, you know, it was better than I remembered. I had a pretty good time with it. Like, it's not perfect. There are issues with it where, yeah, you'd like a little bit more fleshed out in the story. You want a little bit more information, a little bit more detail.
Less Ted Raimi CGI.
Yeah, the CGI, like, violence, I have a problem with that. I'd rather see, like, the actual, you know, like, practical effects. Like I said, real special effects. Real tangible special effects. Not something from a computer. But I can forgive that. I can get past that. And, you know, I don't always have to have everything kind of, like, lined up for me. Sometimes I like movies where certain details are kind of left to the imagination.
Open-ended.
Yeah. So, yeah, you can kind of, you know, like, build on that in your own mind and say, this is what I think happens, and I'm okay with that. But, yeah, also, sometimes you want a little bit more depth and information. Certainly, the movie gives a little bit more depth and information about the characters than the short story does. So I guess that's somewhat satisfying. Still, the ending, though, something about it bothers me a little bit. I wish it was a little bit closer to the book. Although it is pretty close, but it's just not quite close enough. What do you think, Nicole? I'm going to amass it. I'll amass the movie. And yeah, like I said, it was more fun as a violent horror film than I remembered it being.
Right. Okay. So I was going into this. This is my second viewing of this movie. The first one being in 2008.
In the theater with Clive Barker.
And I can honestly say the only thing I remembered about it was him cutting on off those tumors.
Well, it is a pretty disturbing scene.
So I going into it, it's almost like I was watching a new movie because
you hadn't seen it in so long.
I hadn't seen it.
You hadn't seen it in like 12 years.
I was very. I liked the story a lot. Of course, like you said, there were, you know, there were some things wrong or things that, you know, didn't connect for me. But I'm going to amass it too because I really, I enjoyed my viewing. I thought we had a lot of fun watching it.
We had a good time.
Yeah. And I do, in this instance, kind of like to speculate about the creatures, about the jewelry, about the you know, him becoming a mahogany.
And you know what you're going to do now? You're going to write some fan fiction.
I'm not a good writer, so probably not. I'll leave that up to the professionals.
Okay.
Well, or, you know, the non-professionals.
If it's fan fiction.
If it's fan fiction.
But you can, you know what you should do? You should just give Clive Barker a call. Just call him up and say, hey, how about to expand it on this whole Midnight Meat Train a little bit?
Can you tell me a continuation of the story?
Yeah, let's get a little bit more out of this.
Well, I can draw my own conclusions, I guess.
Okay. Now, the movie is based on a short story by Clive Barker. Like I said, he may have been a producer. That's probably true. At least some sort of production credit of some sort. Some of his paintings were featured, like I said, in the art gallery in the movie. But he did not direct it. The director is actually Ryuhei Kitamura, is my best attempt at pronouncing his name. He did a movie called Versus back in the year 2000, which the premise of the movie always sounds really great, but I've tried to watch it, and I watched it like I've seen it like 3 times now, and I just can't get into it. I just think the characters are like, I don't know, I don't like any of them. I can't get into it. Versus from 2000. However, he also directed a movie called Godzilla Final Wars in the year 2004, which was at that time, of course, the final Toho Godzilla movie. But, of course, then they have since done another one. Yes, but, yeah. Anyway, that was more enjoyable than Versus, if you're interested in seeing another movie from this director. And if you like Godzilla. And you should like Godzilla. Right, Nicole?
Absolutely.
Yes. What are we going to talk about for the second movie of this double feature?
Well, Rawhead Rex, Craig.
That's a weird name, too. The Midnight Meat Train, that's kind of a weird name, but Rawhead Rex, maybe that's a little more strange.
It is a little weird. Now, Rawhead.
Yeah, so we had the Midnight Meat Train, and now we're talking about Rawhead Rex. So that's kind of how these movies fit together, right? That's the only way these movies fit together is because
meat of and raw.
Meat and raw. Raw makes you think of raw meat.
So this is the raw meat episode.
Yes, this is the raw meat episode, but it's yes. No, this is the Midnight Meat Train and Rawhead Rex.
Okay.
Raw Meat's a totally different movie.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
So Rawhead Rex, that is the name of the short story as well, which is contained in Books of Blood Volume 3, also from back in 1984, 1985, something like that. I have seen the future of horror. And his name is Clive Barker. Who said that, Nicole?
I believe you said that earlier.
Yeah, but who said it?
Stephen King.
Okay, right. All
Were
right.
You just testing me?
Yeah, I was just testing your memory to see if you could remember. So Rawhead Rex, the movie, based on the short story of the same name, Rawhead Rex. The short story is a little bit longer. Like the Midnight Meat Train is only like 35 pages or something like that. I think Rawhead Rex is actually more than 100 pages. So it's a little bit lengthier.
Okay.
And for this movie, as I said at the beginning of the episode, that, you know, Clive Barker, he wrote a couple of screenplays for some of these early movies, and The Midnight Meat Train not being one of them, because that was from 2008. But Rawhead Rex here is from 1986, and there was another movie that was done the year prior to this that Clive Barker also wrote the screenplay for, but ultimately he was not pleased with either film.
Okay.
And oddly enough, they were both directed by the same person. His name is George Pavlo. In 1985, he directed the movie Underworld, also known as Transmutations. Okay. And that screenplay was also done by Clive Barker. And then, yes, in 1986, Rawhead Rex, also directed by George Pavlo, and written by Clive Barker. So the screenplay, the story, is pretty much the same as the short story.
Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty similar. Some of the events are kind of mixed around a little bit, and they're just a little bit different for the screen version, but ultimately the story is pretty much the same.
Does it give any more, does the short story give any more education on what the Rawhead Rex is?
Like background details?
Yeah.
Not really. A little bit.
I guess this is my problem, I think.
This is your problem with some of these early Clive Barker short stories.
I just need a little more history, I guess.
A little bit more detail. And yeah, you know, it kind of hints around and suggests things, you know, that, you know, this Rawhead is some sort of character from the past, you know, like,
well,
a historic beast.
I thought
beast,
it was
which
like
they
a
reference.
Fertility god.
Yeah, they reference that in the movie as well. A fertility god, Nicole.
Well, you know, I think that they said a fertility god, but I don't know if that's true or if that was just me making that up.
Well, they do talk about like some like fertility rites or something like that, or something in the area of Ireland wherever this is taking place.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you look at the movie version, Rawhead Rex, the Rawhead creature is like a giant beast.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I don't know if that fits the whole, like, fertility thing, does it?
I have no idea.
But, apparently, Clive Barker, like I said, he was very dissatisfied with the movie overall.
It seems like, and I've said this before, he's always dissatisfied.
He's always dissatisfied. He was very dissatisfied with the movie. Didn't like the acting, which I would say some of the acting is a little weak at times. He also, he hated the design of Rawhead because in the movie, it's kind of like this giant ogre monster kind of thing. So what Clive Barker's idea for it was kind of more fits in line with fertility rights. In his mind, yeah, it was supposed to be like this giant kind of like phallus kind of looking thing with like a very raw kind of like head, face. And yeah, so maybe that fits more of the fertility element. Is being suggested. But
I guess they had to make it a monster to get the horror, like,
yeah, I suppose.
Make it scarier.
Yeah, that was the idea,
than
I guess.
Giant.
For the
giant penis going around killing people.
Yeah, exactly. Which, yeah. Anyway, an interesting story choice, I guess, by Clive Barker. I wonder, you know, if this has something to do with, like, maybe, like, a, you know, relationship that's soured for him or something at some point. Like,
who knows?
You know, in his past, or, like, someone he knew or something. And, like, yeah, I don't know. That's what I always, you know, kind of thought.
Okay.
Is that, you know, like, this must be based around some sort of person, you know, in his mind, you know, is Rawhead. You know, that's kind of what I always thought.
Okay.
But, yes, Rawhead Rex is the name of the movie, the name of the story, but it's never referred to as Rawhead Rex in the movie or the short story.
They just say Rawhead.
Yes, yeah. They always just refer to it as Rawhead. So, enough with the Rawhead stuff here. Let's talk about IMDb, Nicole.
Oh.
Let's talk about the plot summary,
okay.
Plot synopsis. Are you ready, Nicole?
Yes.
An ancient creature called Rawhead is awakened from its slumber near an Irish village, and goes on a rampage, killing anyone in sight.
Yeah, that's basically it.
Yeah, that's basically the movie right there. Just a lot of brutality, killing, things like that.
Yeah.
So Rawhead Rex, it's listed as 1986. However, it received a very limited U.S. theatrical release by Empire Pictures in April 17th of 1987, and then shortly thereafter was released on VHS by Vestron Video. However, the Blu-ray release is not part of the Vestron Video Collector series. This was released by Kino Lorber a few years ago, and I think in 2017, and it's actually a very nice, like, Blu-ray release with, like, a slipcover for Rawhead Rex, which, you know, is maybe a movie that doesn't really deserve such a nice release, but it got one. It's rated R, Nicole. It runs 1 hour and 29 minutes, and it is listed on IMDb as a fantasy horror mystery.
Okay.
I don't feel like there are a lot of fantasy elements.
They're in Ireland.
Yeah, it's just because they're in Ireland and it's a mythical beast, I guess.
Yes, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. So how does this movie, how do we kick things off here with this movie, Nicole? What happens at the beginning?
Well, basically, you know, there is some legend or folk legend, like, surrounding the first action here. This farmer was, you know, trying to remove a pillar or a post in his field.
Made of stone,
made
it appears.
Made of stone. So, you know, that is a legend that you should leave those old posts alone, because you just never know what they're holding down.
It was in the way of planting his crops, but
right.
Yes. And it even looks to have, like, markings on it.
Yeah, it does have some markings on it. But yeah, any old superstitious farmer knows, you just leave those old posts there.
Yeah, you gotta leave it there.
You just leave those there.
I think even, you know, if there's, like, even like a tree or something, like in the middle of a field or something. You kind of try to work around that because apparently that's still there for a reason. That's what I always think.
It's there for a reason. It could be holding something down.
You never know.
You just never know.
So, yeah, they're working on this thing.
Yeah, they're trying to wiggle it out. They have a big, they have a tractor.
Mm-hmm.
So they're digging around it. Finally, like, his buddies leave because...
they've given up. Well, they gotta have dinner. The one guy's very hungry. He needs to have dinner.
Said his dinner's waiting on him or something.
Yes, the dinner's on the table by now. He's gotta go home and eat the dinner.
So, the farmer, he just doesn't want to give up. And he's just keeps wiggling it.
He's got his shovel or his spade or something. He's digging around in there trying to pry it loose.
Yeah. So, anyway... what happens then, Greg?
Well, there's a storm a-brewing in the sky. There's a storm.
It doesn't look natural.
You know something weird is going on here. He keeps working at it. Finally, like, I think maybe some air, like, bursts out from the ground. I don't know, maybe there's some light.
Seal breaking.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. So, yeah, and it starts to kind of shake, I think, the pillar a little bit. The pillar starts to shake a little bit. And then what happens here, Nicole?
The raw head bursts out.
Raw head bursts out of the ground. An eruption of raw head bursting out of the ground. And what does raw head look like, Nicole?
He looks like a big rubber monster.
Yeah, a big rubber monster. Like I said, kind of like an ogre-looking thing,
yeah,
almost.
Big forehead, like... Pointy ears? Does he have pointy ears?
I don't know. I'm not sure about his ears.
I don't know about that, but...
He does have big, like, giant mouth, little kind of beady eyes.
Yeah, but the giant mouth has teeth on the outside, but if you look in, he has another set of teeth inside.
Yeah, you definitely get a few shots of, yes, the mouth inside the mouth.
And I do think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, like, so it's kind of like alien... Or aliens, almost, in a way, because he's got, like, this double jaw, double set of teeth. Like, he's got these big teeth, and then inside is that other mouth, like you said. But this mouth, it doesn't, like, shoot out like the aliens or anything like that.
Aliens.
No, no. But what about his hair, Nicole? This is what you said. You, like, said to me, I don't think he's wearing a hat or something.
I do. I always
He's wearing a little hat.
I always think he's wearing a little hat.
He's wearing a little hat. But what is it really, Nicole?
Well, it's his hair, and yeah, I guess, like, when I have seen it in the past, I guess I remembered it as a hat.
A little hat. But yes, he's got, like, kind of like a mohawk almost, top knot kind of thing. I don't know what's going on. But yeah, he's got some kind of weird hair thing going on.
Yeah, and,
Yeah, that's so Rawhead.
That's him.
He's like a big, like... And he's very tall.
He's a giant man.
9 feet tall, something like that. I think they describe him as like 9 feet tall.
Okay.
But he's, and yeah, very like muscular looking as well.
Yeah. And I guess it's just wearing old leathers.
Yeah.
Just like.
Old medieval leathers.
So he kills the farmer.
Yes, he does.
And then he basically just walks around and. Kills other people.
Yeah, like the description said. Just kills on sight. Anything he gets in his way. He first goes to like a...
Farmhouse. So this is the farmhouse scene is where I thought, okay, they did say fertility god or rights in the beginning because he kills, you know, the other farmer at the farmhouse.
The man. He kills the male farmer.
He kills the male farmer, but the female... I guess the farmer's wife.
The farmer's wife, or the female farmer.
She's pregnant. And, yeah, he leaves her alone.
Yeah, he leaves her alone.
He doesn't kill her.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird scene where he's pursuing her. And then, I don't know if he like, tears her dress that she's wearing, or what happens. I think so. I think he slashes the dress. Then,
he sees her belly.
And he has, like, his big clawed hand down there ready to rip her open, but then, like, his claws kind of retract.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah.
Oh, and she's like, pregnant.
Oh, she's pregnant.
Kill her.
You know, I'm going to leave her alone. So, and yeah, I don't know. It's a weird scene where, like, you know, it's like he wants to kill her, but then she's pregnant, so he feels like he can't do it. And he's very disappointed. Like, Rawhead is very upset about it. And kind of screams, and then the police then are investigating this. They find, like, the farmhouse and everything has been destroyed. Because, like, not only does Rawhead attack the people, but he also destroys everything in sight. So, like, he goes into the kitchen in the house, and he just starts smashing things all willy-nilly. Like, he just wants to wreck everything.
Wreck it all.
So, yeah, they're seeing all this destruction, and they're like, well, it must have been, like, a group of people for, you know, such a mess here in this house. And they find her then, the farmer lady, the farmer's wife, and she's gone, like, insane or something. Yeah, she's lost her mind. She's crazy.
Definitely scarred.
Yeah.
And traumatized from, you know, seeing this big, you know,
Rawhead.
Rubber-like ogre.
Yeah, rubber ogre. Rawhead.
So then I think there's another storyline that focuses on, like, I don't know if he's writing a book and he's getting information.
He's writing some sort of book. And this is a family from the United States.
Yeah.
Which I feel like was included just to try to kind of market it in the U.S. or something. You needed to have a U.S. family in the movie. Otherwise, no one in the United States would be interested in all these Irish people. Somebody decided that at a studio, apparently. Which, you know, ridiculous.
So, obviously, the Americans are not in the book. Or
right,
the short
yes.
story. Okay. Let,
like, the character's there, but not American.
Okay.
Yes.
So the
still
American,
like,
he's
from,
like,
England.
I don't know. He's writing a book, so the novelist.
He's writing a book. This character's name is Howard Hallenbeck, played by David Dukes. Not David Duke. There's an S at the end of this. That name is kind of, it sounds bad these days. But, yes, he's writing a book, like you said, about historic Irish sites, it seems.
Yeah, yeah. So he's at this old, well, and his family and his two children are on the business trip with
yes,
him.
His wife, played by Kelly Piper, is Elaine. His son, Robbie, is played by Hugh O'Connor. And their daughter, Minty, is played by Cora Lunny. Minty.
That's it. I've not heard that.
Minty. You want to name a cat that?
Yeah, it's cute.
Minty.
That's...
No. So, anyway. Yes, they're right. He's writing a book. The family is in tow. They're on vacation. And they're kind of frustrated because, you know, like, he's spending time at these sites. But, hey, you know, he's trying to write a book. So, like, they're just kind of along for the ride and, you know, whatever. So he's investigating a church, right?
Yeah, he's at this old church. And he's, you know, looking around the graveyard, the cemetery.
The churchyard.
You know, taking pictures. And he wants to go in the church and take some pictures of their stained glass.
So he comes across the verger, Nicole. The verger. What's the verger's name?
Declan
O'Brien, played by Ronan Wilmot.
And he's a very intense character.
Yes, he takes himself and everything else very seriously. But this might be after. Maybe he was normal before. But he has put his hand, for some reason, onto the church altar. And it's kind of like burned him. Do you remember this scene, Nicole?
I do remember this scene. So it almost seemed like a ray of light filtered through the stained glass.
Through, yes, because in one section of the stained glass, Rawhead is there on the stained glass.
Yeah. So it looks like the light is shooting through Rawhead's eyes.
Yeah, two red beams of light.
And they shoot.
Like lasers.
Like lasers onto the altar.
Declan O'Brien.
Which is covered by an altar cloth. And,
oh, yes.
And anyway, Declan puts his hand on it, and it does kind of, like, blister his hand.
Yes.
So I don't know if he was crazy before or what.
Yes, but he is now for sure.
Right. So the Howard comes in, and he's asking if he can take pictures, and Declan's very confrontational.
Yeah,
right,
he is.
Right from the beginning, like, you'll have to ask, you know,
Reverend Coote.
And then
Howard makes the joke.
is he old?
Yeah, he doesn't happen to be old, does he? Because then, old coot, Nicole, that's great. That's a great
and
joke.
And Declan doesn't even move a face muscle at
oh,
all.
Oh, no, he doesn't humor that at all. Not at all.
He is not into that.
He didn't appreciate it one bit. But yeah, so Howard ends up talking to Reverend Coot. And yes, there's an agreement, you know, that he can check out the parish records. He can take some photographs in the church. That's fine. The parish records then have gone missing, apparently. He can't find them. Reverend Coot has lost the parish records. They're just gone. And he said, Howard says, stolen? He's like, it would seem so. They're stolen. Which, you know, seems crazy.
Crazy.
Why would the parish records be stolen?
Because this small Irish town, you know, in the middle of nowhere.
I know. It's ridiculous. Just ridiculous. But yes, so there's basically mayhem. Basically mayhem ensues with Rawhead. There's like a...
Because he's running around unchecked, you
know? I forget what they call it there. A caravan. That's what they call it. They call it a caravan. And it's like a trailer park, really,
yeah,
kind of.
A caravan park.
So a caravan park in Ireland here. What's going on here is Rawhead just starts kind of like terrorizing this whole area.
Yeah. So you have these characters. It starts out with this like little kid.
Yeah, a little kid. Little Neil. Neil's irritating
Neil.
Like his brother or his sister.
I think it's his sister and her boyfriend.
Yeah, that's what I think.
So they're older. They're making out on the couch or whatever in the caravan. And for one thing, they're making out right in front of the kid.
Yeah. But like, the kid's supposed to be watching TV and playing with his toys.
I know, but it's like 2 foot away from them.
Yeah, 2 foot away.
I don't know. Just as I wanted more privacy.
Oh, I see. But yeah, so they go out to make out in the woods. The Rawhead attacks, of course. He ends up ripping off the arm of the boyfriend, and she keeps running back to the caravan. And thinks that he's still with her because she's still holding on to his hand.
Yeah.
But the hand is dismembered.
Oh, good times.
Good times in the caravan park.
Yeah, basically then Rawhead, like as you said, terrorizes. He flips over a caravan.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And like, he like pulls someone out. And, of course, her clothes get ripped off. And you said, Here's a blatant booby picture, I think is what you said.
I think a shot.
Yes.
Think a shot.
So the police are trying to investigate what's happening. Howard has seen something when he went out for a walk. He thought he saw Rawhead, like, standing in the woods in a field. And they're like, oh, you saw cows. You saw cattle.
And he's like, I know what cattle look like.
So, yes, he gets very frustrated because the police don't believe that he's seen some sort of creature or something, of course, because the police never believe you when you see a creature. That's just how it is.
Well, then Howard decides, you know, I'm going to take the family and leave.
Yeah, he's going to get his photographs. He goes back for, like, a last set of photographs. And then the verger, Declan O'Brien, he grabs the camera from him and, like, throws it on the ground and, like, crushes it.
Yeah, but it's a Polaroid.
It's just a Polaroid camera.
It's a Polaroid camera. So Howard already has a lot of the pictures.
He does have the photographs.
So he put them in his pocket. So yes. It's not like they were on film and the film was lost.
That is correct, Nicole.
So Howard and the family are on their way out of town.
Oh, they're going to leave town. They're splitting because this area is crazy.
This is crazy. And
His wife's just had enough.
Yeah,
of, like,
she's tired of the
They
kids.
Want to move on to Dublin. They're done.
Yeah, they want to go. So his wife, I think, is the one who sees something in the field, right?
Or yeah, they see him? Like a they see a scarecrow, and they stop then, and they're like, oh my God, I thought I saw something in the field, but it's really just a scarecrow. And then they keep going a little bit. The daughter, though, Minty, has to pee, Nicole.
I know, but, you know, if my little kid had to pee, you just open the door and set them out there. You don't traipse into the field.
Yeah, they say, you know, go over in this field behind this bush. And it's like, you know, like a good like 20 yards away.
Right. I mean, okay, she's like four.
She's four.
She can go to the bathroom on the side of the road.
Just go right there.
Just go.
So they send her around. And she, of course, is eaten by Rawhead. No, I'm kidding.
No.
There's a dead rabbit behind the bush. And she screams, and, you know, the parents both go running over to check on her.
And her brother's just like, whatever.
And then Robbie's reading an issue of Secret Wars from Marvel Comics in the van, just reading away. And he's like, I don't care what's happening. And then while the parents are attending to Minty, Rawhead does appear near the van.
And pulls Robbie out.
And eats him. Robbie is killed. So
right. And so then that's where I thought, well, maybe this isn't fertility because he just killed a kid.
So I don't know. Maybe, you know,
You don't see it. It's not gratuitous.
Maybe the kid was old enough. Maybe it's because it's a little boy. I don't know. But, yes. He's killed, he's eaten, and this is always shocking to me since I originally saw this back in the day, that a child is eaten by Rawhead.
I know.
Shocking moment.
But they don't show it.
No, they don't.
They don't show it, so...
No.
But yeah, I always think that when a kid...
Bites it.
You know, it is shocking.
It's shocking. So then, of course, they go back to the police and, you know, like, what are you going to do about this? And... Oh, you know, everything goes crazy. So, basically, the rest of the movie is Rawhead attacking, killing people. Howard trying to kind of solve, like, some sort of mystery. The mystery element, according to IMDb's genre tags.
He's figured out, since he took those Polaroids, that some of the stained glass windows were put together. I guess they were taken out.
They were damaged at one point. And then reassembled.
So they mixed some of the pieces up.
Yes.
In the stained glass.
Yes.
So he's figured out, you know...
Like a puzzle.
A puzzle, how to banish the Rawhead.
This piece doesn't fit with this image, but it actually should go in the stained glass image that features Rawhead. There's a figure standing above Rawhead who's holding something. And he sees this something in one of the other stained glass windows. And it's like a tablet or a stone or something. Mm-hmm. Some sort of weapon, he says. And it's shooting kind of like a beam of light down onto Rawhead, kind of driving it down into the ground and hurting it somehow.
Yeah.
So, this is what he's saying to, I believe, Reverend Coote, trying to figure out what this is, where this could be. Of course, the verger, Declan O'Brien, is always trying to put a stop to this. At this point, also, Reverend Coote has touched the altar too, but he's not driven to the same kind of madness that Declan O'Brien is. Declan O'Brien runs across Rawhead in the churchyard, and to me, this is the standout scene in the book, in the short story,
it's like,
and in the movie.
It's really weird.
And like, yes, Reverend Coote comes out, sees Declan O'Brien like on his knees in the churchyard, and sees...
Showing subservience to Rawhead.
And Rawhead is in front of him and begins to pee on him. So he's urinating on Declan O'Brien, peeing on him.
I guess that's a baptism.
Yes,
of
essentially
sorts.
Baptizing him as, you know, a servant of Rawhead. So, yes, in the short story, it's even more disgusting because, you know, like he's so excited, he's like, you know, like moving his head back and forth, like, oh, he loves this that he's being peed on by Rawhead.
Yeah.
And then at the end, he has him like in the palms of his hands. And he, like, holds it to his mouth, and he drinks it.
That's in the short story.
That's in the short story.
Wow.
Yes. So.
Well, I'm glad I didn't see that.
Yes. You're glad that wasn't in the movie. But, yes, at this point, Reverend Coote is like, oh, my God, something is clearly wrong with Declan O'Brien. But, yes, so, yes, they're at odds then, of course. Rawhead ends up killing Reverend Coote. But... How we kind of wrap this up is Howard figures out that something must be inside the altar. He ends up kind of like prying the altar open, not touching it because his hands would be burned then and blistered. He pries it open with a candlestick, pries it open, grabs this like stone out of it, right?
Yeah, stone tablet.
Yes, and tries to use it against Rawhead. However, It doesn't work.
No. It just doesn't do anything.
It doesn't do anything. So it was like, oh my God, you know, now what am I going to do? However, then, his wife, Elaine, has come onto the scene. And, you know, Howard, of course, is trying to evade Rawhead, trying to stay alive. She instinctively
picks it up.
Picks it up, puts it to use, and what happens, Nicole?
Yeah, then it drives him down.
It drives him down. So it had to be
a woman.
Yes. Gotta be a woman.
Gotta be a woman.
You know what? This is why you gotta have women around, Nicole, because they take care of things like this.
That's right.
Men can't do it. They're idiots. So, yes, Rawhead Rex. Yeah, this is a great feminist film, apparently. Yeah. Yes. Well, the movie Rawhead Rex. What do you think of this movie overall, Nicole?
I thought it was...
Have you seen this before? This wasn't the first time you've seen it.
I think I've seen it before.
Yeah, I think so.
So sometimes it's funny.
Yes.
Sometimes it's boring.
Okay.
And sometimes I don't care.
And sometimes you don't care. So, if you're going to amass or murder Rawhead Rex...
Well, I've certainly seen worse.
You've seen worse than Rawhead.
You
can give your honest opinion on the show, Nicole.
Well, that is my honest opinion. I've seen worse.
I've seen
way better. I probably don't have to see it again.
You probably don't have to see Rawhead again? Okay.
But I feel like murdering it would be really, like, you know, like, too tough on it.
Yeah.
So why don't we just, like, say it's undead?
No, you can't do that. All right, you've chosen to murder it. I will amass it, only because of nostalgia reasons, I believe. The movie, it's not very good. Clive Barker has a point, like the acting is usually not very good in the movie.
And that's probably why sometimes it's funny.
Yes, it is. I think it is fun to watch. Like, you said it was boring. I don't know. For me, I don't think it's ever really boring. I think the pace is always like, man, like, I think, like, things just fly by pretty quickly, in my opinion. So, I don't know, maybe it's just
only an hour and 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's only an hour, well, it's like an hour and 29 minutes. But still, yes, it's not particularly long, which helps. But, yeah, I think, like, it moves ahead so quickly, and maybe it's just because of my nostalgia for it. That could certainly be. But, yeah, you just kind of keep rolling through it, and Rawhead's just destroying everything. So that's the element I think that could be boring about it, is just this giant Rawhead monster that, you know, just kind of destroys things around the countryside and kills people. And, you know, it gets a little redundant after a while. Yeah. But you got the whole scene with Declan O'Brien getting peed on. You get Robbie getting killed. There's some shocking scenes in the movie that you don't expect. So, yeah. There are elements to it that I'm always going to enjoy. The Rawhead creature itself is, you know, just kind of ridiculous, and, you know, that appeals to me. That, in the Rawhead suit, was actor Heinrich von Schellendorf, Nicole.
Oh, that's what he sounds like, a big guy.
Sounds very German. Yeah,
big,
very tall,
muscular man.
And only 19 years old at the time when he was doing this. Heinrich von Schellendorf. Did you know, Nicole, here's the did you know moment of the Rawhead Rex segment, that the actor who played Chewbacca, Peter Mayhew, was approached for the role of Rawhead. However, his financial demands were too high.
Okay.
Too high. So, they couldn't afford him.
I don't think that guy is as muscular as Rawhead, the Heinrich.
Well, yeah, maybe not.
Yeah.
He may have had to work out. Or they would have had to pad him up or something.
Up.
Yeah, I don't know. So, no real financial details on Rawhead Rex because of the limited release. Any kind of money it did would have been, like, on home video, on VHS. However, its budget apparently was originally planned at being, like, $2.5 to $3 million. But then, when the production began, it was cut to, like, $1.5 million. So that's kind of a drastic difference in, you know, your financials when you're beginning to make a movie. So I'm sure that had an effect on the movie as well. You know, the director can just claim, you know what? I just didn't have the money to make a better movie.
Well.
How sad.
I don't know if that's an excuse.
You don't think that's going to be good enough, huh?
This is our closing.
Yes, Nicole. This is our closing. Here it is. So we're talking about, like, you know, Rawhead Rex making most of its money on VHS, probably. Yeah. I remember, like, as a kid, you know, after seeing, like, Hellraiser and Hellraiser 2, probably, after seeing those movies, trying to seek out, like, other, like, Clive Barker stuff, you know, have any other Clive Barker movies been made into movies, or any other Clive Barker stories been made into movies? And, you know, you start researching these things as you can in the, you know, early 90s, probably, of your youth. And, you know, like, there's no internet then. You don't have IMDb. You can't just go digging around.
You have to go to the video store.
Yes, you got to go to the video store. You got to, like, you know, read books and, you know, video guides that were published in book form. So.
You had to go, like, because you didn't want to buy these video guides. I didn't.
Oh, I did buy them occasionally.
You bought them occasionally. But I didn't. So you'd have to go hang out at the bookstores and, like, read them.
And just read them, and, huh?
Yeah. And then your mom's, like, yelling, Nicole, let's go! Well, my mom doesn't talk like that, but...
No, you know. Just said she did. I'm going to tell your mom about this. But, yeah, so at some point I discovered that Rawhead Rex, you know, was a movie, and, you know, found it somehow in, like, our small town kind of area. I remember
in the video store, that's probably where I thought he was wearing a hat.
You probably thought he was wearing a hat at the video store.
Because of the box cover art.
Huh.
Or the clamshell art at the video store.
Huh, clamshell. Was it in a clamshell?
I don't know, but weren't they usually in a clamshell?
Not always.
Or just in a...
But sometimes. But yeah, I definitely remember renting Rawhead Rex, probably making a dupe of it back in the day.
Crap!
No, don't tell anyone. But yes, yeah, because, like, you know, the VHS cassettes, they were so expensive back in the day. Yeah. And, like, yeah, it was hard to find them and hard to order them. Like I said, no internet. There was no internet then.
There was no internet.
So... Yeah, Rawhead Rex was one of those weird, like, little, like, you know, gems, if you will, that you would find, you know, like, at the video store when you were scouring the shelves. And, yeah, my sister and I did that a lot back in the video store back in the day. And, yeah, well, you know, because, of course, you hit the horror section and you just, you know, keep looking for great-looking covers. And at the time, yeah, Rawhead Rex, like, the cover art was not what it is today. And it was kind of like, it was... kind of strange looking. So, yeah, it's not...
Did it show him? Is that where
I'm sure it probably saw him. It may have shown him on the back of it. Yeah.
Maybe.
But, yeah, it wasn't one of those ones that really would have stood out, I think. I think primarily what would stand out about Rawhead Rex is the title, Rawhead Rex, which is just sounds insane. Did you know, Nicole, that right out in our garage...
we have a poster of Rawhead Rex.
There's a movie poster, an original Rawhead Rex movie poster. And I was like, and at one point, just like not that long ago, I was like, where did I get this one?
Well, our... so
no,
when,
no, no, but yes. Okay, go ahead and tell this story.
So when we bought the house, our realtor was talking to us, and he owned a movie store in the
80s. A video store, yes.
Yeah. And so we got to talking about old movies.
And yes, and he knew that we liked movies and horror movies in particular. Yeah.
And he had all these old horror movie posters that he gave us.
Yes, yeah, we got like, I don't know, maybe like five from him or something. Yeah. So those are in the garage. But Rawhead, I'm pretty sure that I just ordered that one separately. Really? Because I thought it would be a weird movie poster to have from the 80s to put out there. So I think I did actually purchase that one.
That's funny.
And put it out there. But yeah, so we do have Rawhead Rex. Rawhead Rex lives in our garage. So if that poster is ever removed, Rawhead.
Oh, no. No. Yes. Okay, so it's if we ever move, it's staying here.
No.
Yeah, that's what you heard. Everybody heard that.
You gotta take it along.
Everybody heard it.
That's terrible, Nicole.
Yeah, you said it out loud, so you put it out in the world.
Oh.
It's true.
Oh, my God. You put it out in the world. It's true. Now, Nicole, did you know that we have one more Summer of Clive episode remaining.
What is it?
Well, now, this is going to upset some people. This might upset some people. Because maybe the Summer of Clive, you're expecting that at some point...
it's going to be Hellraiser?
Maybe for the finale, it's going to be Hellraiser. And it's not. So people are going to be very upset. Because Hellraiser is actually being saved for something else that might be happening in October. Yes.
Oh.
So, if you want Hellraiser, just wait a little bit longer and tune back into the show in October.
Okay. Bring on the Cenobites.
Yes. Bring on the Cenobites, Craig! And Uncle Frank. Uncle Frank and Julia... Nicole, they're the real villains of Hellraiser. Now, yes, for the finale of The Summer of Clive, in our next episode, we're going to be talking about Quantum Leap. Nicole's very confused.
I do like Scott Bakula.
We're going to be talking about Scott Bakula appearing in a Clive Barker movie.
Okay.
Nicole, do you know what it is? Do you remember what this could be? It's a movie about magic and illusion.
I do remember. It's
and
called
the movie's called what?
Lord of Illusions.
That is it. Yes. So we're going to be talking about Lord of Illusions based on the short story, The Last Illusion by Clive Barker. Also from the Books of Blood, Volume 6 of the Books of Blood. So Lord of Illusions, that'll be in the next episode of A Cure. For the Common, Craig, wrapping up the Summer of Clive. Where can they find us? On the internet? On their phones? Where can they find us on social media, Nicole? How do these listeners find more information about A Cure for the Common, Craig?
Well, on Facebook, Craig.
Facebook, Craig? Yes, on Facebook, Craig, they can find us at A Cure for the Common, Craig. That's the page.
Twitter.
You can find us on Twitter at Common Craig.
Instagram.
You can find us at Cure for the Common, Craig.
And we have a website.
There's a website. And that web address is cureforthecommoncraig.com. When you go there, you click on the little splash page that says A Mass or Murder. And then it takes you to a list of the episodes, and you listen to all the episodes, then you give us feedback on the episodes, and we might send you a sticker.
Cool.
We talked about two movies today. Clive Barker, Summer of Clive double feature, The Midnight Meat Train, and Rawhead Rex. We try to remember to mention this on the episodes, but we tend to forget. Are these movies, Nicole, available on any streaming services currently?
I don't know.
I don't know if they are. Let's backtrack a little bit. Candyman currently, as of this month, is still on Netflix if you want to watch Candyman. Nightbreed, specifically the director's cut. I don't know that it's listed as the director's cut, but it is on Amazon Prime available for streaming. Rawhead Rex is currently not available for any kind of streaming, although you can rent it on a variety of services like Amazon and probably, you know, Google Play or YouTube or things like that. I don't know. But it's out there for rent if you want to rent Rawhead. The Midnight Meat Train is available for streaming apparently on Hoopla, which I've never used. I've never used Hoopla, but apparently it's on there.
I use Hoopla.
You've used it?
Yeah.
That's where you get some of your books?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's available on there, apparently. And it's also available for rent on some services as well. So if you want to watch or stream some of these, you don't like to buy physical media, there are ways to see these movies, Nicole.
Okay. How about Lord of Illusions?
Lord of Illusions? We haven't gotten to that one yet. So we'll talk about that in the next episode.
You just don't want anybody to pre-watch.
No, don't watch it in advance. No, you can watch it in advance because we're going to spoil it. But you'll have to look for that for yourself. I haven't looked that one up yet. Lord of Illusions, it's probably out there somewhere. All right, Nicole, so we're going to return with our next episode, wrapping up the Summer of Clive.
Okay.
Because you're tired of Clive Barker and it's time to move on to something else.
Oh, goodness.
You're not really.
I'm not really.
You're not really. You're fine. after the Summer of Clive has ended, we're going to have an episode in there that I haven't told you about yet. We're going to do that one. And then, after that, Nicole, did you know that at the end of September, it will be our 1 year anniversary of doing the podcast?
I did for know the Common that. Craig. What's our we have something special.
We have something special planned for that one, so we'll get back to that later.
Okay.
And then in October, October's a big month.
October is a big month.
For A Cure for the Common Craig, and just Craig in general. And Nicole has to suffer through it.
You know, I love October.
Sometimes she has a very good time. Other times, when she's forced to watch things she doesn't like, maybe not so much. But this, yeah, it's almost here, Nicole.
You know, I'm pretty easygoing. I've watched a lot of things I've never wanted to watch.
It's only a little more than a month away. Halloween is almost here.
It is almost here.
I can't believe what you just said, by the way. Thank you, listeners, for listening to the show. We always appreciate it when you listen to the show. We also appreciate any kind of feedback you leave us. If we don't say that enough, we're sorry, but we always do appreciate you as listeners. Correct, Nicole?
Yes. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening, Nicole. All right. Good night, Nicole. Yeah, can I say good night?
Good night. You know, if you were very thirsty, you can drink warm urine.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah, I'm sure the Declan was very thirsty.
Just saying.